I think most of the time the art is a form of meditation. Meditations on a subject. Sometimes it's a love or a love lost or a potential love or...
Oh, yeah.
You know, a repeated...
Making sense of love, right?
Yeah, making sense of the world around you.
Creative engagement. Hello, I'm your host, Daniel Mandel, and I invite you to join us at the intersection of artistry and engagement. I'll be shining a light on the importance of authentic self-expression and participation in life. My purpose is to stimulate curiosity that will lead to play so that we can all live our most meaningful adventure. In my work as a coach, I create transformation through inquiry and creativity to allow LGBTQ+ individuals to address the challenges of living life as open-minded and wholehearted independent thinkers. This episode, my guest is Jamie Zubairi, who goes by Zubi. Zubi is a performer, painter, photographer, and poet that I met at an amazing artist retreat in Cornwall in the UK many years ago. The Discipline of Freedom is an artist workshop. The workshop is limited to 9 participants and includes artists from all disciplines who are open and willing to develop and improve themselves. The workshop is led by Paul Ortel and his wife, Nancy Spanier. Paul and Nancy are world-class teachers with long, rich histories in the performing arts, dance, choreography, theater, acting, voice, film, and peacemaking. The Discipline of Freedom is more than just an artist workshop. It's also a gathering of souls searching for deeper knowing. Usually, this is offered in or adjacent to a destination of amazing beauty and historical significance. There is a profound opportunity for transformation and a high likelihood of facing yourself and your fears. The experience is an invitation into a radical exploration of your own creativity and depth. Through this work, I met Kath Berlinson, who is a teacher and an artist, a director and performer, and founder of the Authentic Artist Community in the UK. It's so heartwarming to connect with Zubi, who is a friend and has shared these workshops and even attended an online Billy gathering from the UK as he led a workshop for Billy's in life drawing. Later on, Zubi shares a poem with us.
I know I always say I'm excited, and I always am excited, but I'm very excited to announce and introduce Jamie Zubairi, who goes by Zubi. And Zubi is a performer, a painter, a photographer, and a poet. So welcome, Zubi.
Thank you, Daniel. I'm really excited to be asked and to be on your podcast.
I have to say, I think that performer, painter, photographer, and poet feels like the short list for the output that I've witnessed from you. So I want to just ask you to share with everybody, tell us the story of Zubi and what creativity and artistry and expression has done. What's that story?
It started, I know that some of your podcasts have mentioned the workshops, that how I met you. Discipline of Freedom workshops that we did in Cornwall. And it kind of started there. I guess as a child, I always painted, I always drew, I always told stories. So those two things were always you know, one and the other, you know, they were part of the same thing. I had little Playmobil figures, which I would, you know, I'd have a family, and there would be a story with them, and you know, as a kid, and even, you know, I remember my first piece of artwork that I did at kindergarten, and I was really proud of it. The teacher, I can't remember her name, but I remember what she looked like. She wore glasses. She had this short kind of wavy hair and a beige blouse with a beige dress, skirt, pencil skirt. And she said, "Yeah, not bad." Oh. Which I was like, she knows nothing.
Not bad. Who is this woman?
who is this? I mean, I can't even remember what the painting was. It was probably a house or something banal. But I kind of knew that it was something I enjoyed. It was something I really, really thought I did well on. There was certainly something that the creativity, the kind of output, I was really passionate about, and I really defended it, and it really hurt me that she didn't like it. Creativity to me is, I think I got to an age where I stopped saying no to myself. Like, I can't do that. It's probably when I got to England. I grew up in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur, in Malaysia. They didn't have much faculty for the arts. I went to a school which, you know, there was no drama, there was no creative writing, there was no nothing. Even the visual arts, it was based mainly on design. So it had to be something with a practical application, you know, like sign working or architecture or something like that. They didn't really encourage fine art, certainly not at secondary school, not where when I was there.
It's interesting to hear that about how things were in Malaysia.
Well, I guess this was the 1970s. They did in the 60s, apparently, because everything was encouraged back then, and they had international competitions for young artists and things like that. My parents were like, let's take them to Britain to have an English education.
We don't always get the encouragement that we might get from like public institutions or the places where we really could get encouragement.
No, certainly not. I mean, I was lucky in that I had parents who did encourage me. There was always drawing around the house. So drawing was always a kind of present for me. And despite all of that, I sort of knew I was going to England and become an actor. I came to England.
How old were you?
I was 16 when I arrived.
What was that like?
I guess I was ready for some sort of culture shock. I went to a high school, I guess you'd call it an equivalent, that didn't do performing arts, but it did do visual arts, and it was very good for visual arts. I chose the art track and did acting as in youth theatre. Because of those two things, that I kept up the painting, I was at university at the time doing a foundation in art, in fine art, as well as doing theatre in you know, the kind of upper end of youth theatre, that I thought, well, I can do these two things. And I was learning to play the guitar at the time, and I wanted to learn how to write songs, and I still am wanting to learn how to write songs. I never said, oh, I can't do these things. I never said no to myself, and that I was always like, well, I'll just do it anyway. Even if people said, oh, you can't write poetry, and you can't do one, you know, you've got to concentrate on one, and everybody says you have to concentrate on one aspect, and I'm like, really, you know, yes, it takes a lot longer to specialize.
I really want to have you share with folks, it's so interesting, like what allowed you to move into that? Was it some kind of permission you gave yourself? And because a lot of people don't get past that, you know, they get they get shut down by a teacher, and then they're shut down. They get circumstances that kind of just squish their soul. Yes. And squeeze them, and they don't do what you did. So how did you, like, there must have been some like wrestling with that.
I certainly remember that my A-level English literature teacher asking the whole class, you know, what we wanted to do, you know, when we went to university. And I said, oh, I want to be an actor. And she said, Jamie, you have to have a better voice than that.
Oh, I think of the teachers that really helped me become more of a critical thinker. It really stimulated my curiosity. And those were some of the best teachers.
Even she was
they
great.
Upset me. You know?
and it's, I think, you know, the greatest teachers upset you for a reason, even if it's Miss Beige going, yeah, that's not bad. Miss McDermott going, you have to have a better voice than that because people need to hear you. And I'm like, you know, because of my radio work, people know the voice. It's like, okay, wow. Okay, cool. God.
You have a beautiful voice.
Oh, thank you. I think going back to your question, your statement about some people get shut down, I think that's the story for a lot of people and sometimes a lot of creatives. You know, they get shut down early. And I think sometimes, somehow, I was passionate about it and I fought back or I said, oh, I'm going to show you. Certainly to how I wanted my art to be and wanted my expression to be in it. I guess it was always about my expression, wanting to get it out there. And
like, I got to say, your output is voluminous. When I look at your webpage and your CV and all the stuff you've done, when you were, you know, as you were becoming a young adult and starting to make your own way in the world, what kinds of things were important to you to express?
I think most of the time, the art is a form of meditation, meditations on a subject. Sometimes it's a love or a love lost or a potential love or...
Oh, yeah.
You know, a repeated...
Making sense of love, right?
Yeah, making sense of the world around you.
And do you notice themes in what you tend to express? Or has anybody ever reflected back to you, Zuby, it seems like everything that you create points to...
Yeah, well, oh God. I've noticed that my own writing sometimes a lot of the time refers to tribe or community or belonging. Mm. Sometimes it refers to loss. So there's something about either belonging or loss that interests me, or that kind of scratches my creative itch, if you know what I mean.
And how much of that is influenced by being mixed race and kind of the othering that you've experienced through that?
That's probably something that I don't know. There's something about being mixed race is that it always feels too, what's the word? It always feels very, which tells me I need to explore it. It always feels too much of a, there's a pride in it. Like I'm proud of it. Whereas actually it's a very difficult thing.
It's not just one thing, right? It's,
yeah. Yeah.
It's your mixed race. It's a mixture of good and bad and challenging and hopeful and beautiful.
And also it's also having one foot in one camp and being felt made suspicious of in that same camp, and having another foot in the other camp, and they're kind of going, oh, you've got foot in the other camp, I see, what are you doing? You know, so it's, there's a whole lot of wanting to belong but knowing you can't,
right?
And also belonging to something else while actually hard. It's kind of like, you know, a yin yang,
yeah,
symbol, yeah. Where even if you're more one thing, there'll always be a part of you that's something else.
Yeah, you know the way this resonates with me is, you know, like there's so much discussion about, you know, real men should do this, or mm-hmm, real mm-hmm. men don't eat quiche, or whatever it is. You know, and I the way that this finally landed in me is that the way I am as a man in the world is best defined by me.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The way I am And what makes me most comfortable about saying I'm a man in the world is to say I'm a man the way Daniel Mandel is a man in the world. That's my way, and that is the way that works for me. And then I don't have to worry about what your thoughts about being a man are, or the general public. Mm-hmm. I can just be the man that I am.
That's beautiful.
It gives everybody a way in to just be their best selves.
It also gives permission. It allows for mistakes to happen.
Yeah.
And for learning to happen.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody's on that, on a different journey, but also different stages of a journey. We can't always be the best of us. Sometimes we're a bit crap, you know?
Right. And do you notice that challenges impact certain art forms in different ways than other art forms?
For me, I am just a human being walking in the world, or walking in two worlds. But there's a kind of, not to say anonymity, but a kind of genderless, raceless, ageless, accentless almost thing in the writing that I like doing.
You're in the Venn diagram between all these things, where you can maybe that's a freeing thing.
I think so. Maybe I think that maybe kind of I think it might be a product of being gay in the 70s and 80s, early, you know, being as a gay, kind of aware that I was gay quite young, or at least different to the other boys, quite young, and having to squirrel away any feelings,
right,
or any expression of that.
Oh yeah, and you and I in our lifetimes have seen these cultural shifts where,
oh, completely. Completely,
things,
yeah,
are so different now.
Yeah,
I can't,
yeah,
imagine what it would be to grow up gay today.
I just, no,
can't imagine it.
I mean, in some ways, it's a lot more. It's totally acceptable. But when homophobia rears its ugly head, and it often, and it sometimes does, it's a complete. I can imagine it can be completely shocking,
right,
to a young person when they get confronted with, you know, a bully or whatever that doesn't like the way they walk or whatever.
There still is bullying and violence and horribleness, even,
yes,
as there's more what I think of as radical acceptance. So
yes,
it's a very strange world.
Yeah. There's kind of learning that they can take from our generation, even though we, you know, it's like we're always expecting the bully to turn up. I don't know if that was true of your experience, but it's certainly one of my early experiences. And I lived in the sort of shadow of AIDS when the UK at the time had massive, almost anti-AIDS adverts, fear-mongering, which was just, you just thought, right, that's it. I'm going to be asexual. I'm not going to want to deal with, you know, my own sexuality. So that expression was put under wraps.
That hits very close to home, because I think the reason why I didn't get bullied growing up is I became a master suppressor.
Right.
Let me just ask you, what feels like that really important message to, you know, that kid who just had that beige teacher tell them that their drawing was okay, but nothing to write home about.
Yeah.
But who really wants to explore creativity, what would you say?
I'd say keep doing it. Keep doing it brighter. Turn up that volume. You know, she's their one voice, their one opinion. What matters is listening to your own heart. Yeah.
There it is. Yeah. Yeah, just don't let one voice squish you.
Certainly not.
I think I might have to invite you back again and again for a series of fascinating conversations. But let me just say thank you very much, Zubi. This has been really delightful, and I'm so happy that we were able to include you and your voice and your experience in this.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. It's wonderful. Thank you. This poem is called Opening, Healing Deeper. Opening, Healing Deeper. With you here, I can't write. You burn so deep, like cauterizing ancient injuries. Healing, opening, healing deeper. Opening, healing deeper. A torchlight on the hidden, carving into stone what I dare not think. And today we had another walk, another clearing, another time among the trees, the place where you are braving, standing up to yourself, with yourself. In the bravery of stepping out or stepping up is sometimes not about saving a life, but saving your own, with yourself. What wavering trees, deep-rooted, only bending at leaf edge, blooming bright on a clear day, when you're here, I can't write anything but my deepest truth.
Thank you. That was exquisite.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to this Creative Engagement podcast. Lifting people up through the celebration of creativity allows us to hold such open and heartfelt conversations. I would appreciate a review. You can rate this podcast and write a review in the Apple Podcasts by going to the show page. When you're on the show page, if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you'll be able to tap to rate this podcast. And below, there is a link to write a review. You can also share each episode as a link to send in email or in chat. Be sure to tell your friends. I always put the links and relevant information in each podcast's episode notes. Thank you. I'm Daniel Mandel. Creative Engagement.